with a great deal of pleasure that I give you Hank G. of New York.
I don't know about this pleasure business, but let's sort of have a little visit together here. And naturally, I speak only for myself. I don't speak for your general service office. I may have some peculiar ideas. And if you disagree with some of them, that'll be all to the good, because at least we'll be yakking about things. And isn't it a fact that if we all thought very much alike, no one would think very much? And so the more that we might discuss various interpretations or thoughts about anything in connection with AA, the better off we'll all be. For instance, I happen to like the thought of liquor. I have no objection to having it in my home. I have most every variant of it that you can think of, even down to old Prince Charlie's Drambuie. I came out with our friend Archie today on the plane, and for the first time we found out that we slept very well together. It seems as though Eve, who was also on the plane, naturally, came back and was going to talk to us and found that we were both off in the arms of Morpheus. But Archie, you see, is one of these non-alcoholics. And I've had the pleasure of sitting with him at dinner and at luncheon occasionally. And as a non-alcoholic, he occasionally will have a cocktail or a drink of some sort. And he is a normal drinker, I suppose you would describe him as. But how he can sit there and suck on one lousy drink for 20 minutes, I'll never understand. But to stray away from that little crack, may I just pay him a personal tribute. As one of the greatest friends and one of the greatest servants this movement has ever had, very few people have the knowledge of the time that he devotes in attempting to do something for our beloved fellowship. Well, let me just tell you a little couple of things about me. For the first 10 years of my drinking, I had absolutely no trouble. In my family, it was a custom that when a child reached the age of 5, if there was a little wine or beer served with a meal, why, I had a little whiskey jigger full of it. And so from the ages of 5 to 15, I had no problem. It was then prohibition. And I got introduced to some warm drugstore gin. I hated the taste of it. I got sick as a dog. And I fell down before I got back home and split my head open and promised my mother for the first time that this would never happen again. It was not the last time I made that promise to her, as well as many other people over the following years, too. Because it took about 25 years to have me reach that state so many of us have reached, when we perhaps wanted nothing more than never to have to drink again. Well, that skipped a couple of years beyond this first escapade, and I started away to school. As an only child and a spoiled brat, I wanted to get away from this parental influence and went to a university quite a few miles away from home. And I got some rather very fine distinctions within the first 3 or 4 months. I made the hardest drinking fraternity on the campus. I was initiated into the Honorary Drinking Society. And at the end of the first semester, I was given a peculiar sort of diploma which said that they had nothing else that they could teach me from that point on. got into another school, and this time I learned much more quickly, because I got this same paper about 3 months after that, and that was the end of this experiment with higher education. Now, I don't mean to stand here and tell you that all I had was trouble with drinking. I didn't. I had an awful lot of fun, too. I loved those blue lights and that soft music and those pretty gowns. I still love the soft lights and the pretty music and the pretty gal. But after working a few years and beginning to wonder that maybe if I had my own fireside, why, I wouldn't drink so much. Maybe this would be a little better. So, I met a gal. She did doing something at the time called the Dartmouth Hop, with a big floppy hat on. She agreed to marry me. And first thing I had to do was teach her a little bit about this drinking business. She never did get it to the same degree of perfection, perhaps, that I achieved. She continued a normal drinker. But dinner party was given in our honor 2 weeks before our wedding. I was meeting a bunch of strange people. By this time, I'd already learned what to do when you were to meet strangers. So I went there well fortified with the better part of a pint, because I didn't know whether there'd be anything floating around there, and to my complete satisfaction and glee, there was much of it. We sat down to dinner, and I sat on the floor under the table. Well, as so often happens to man and wife, the child was conceived, and she was about to come into this world, and I took my wife to the hospital. And of course, again, the stress and the difficulty. And I became the great expert on things medical, telling the hospital administration they didn't know what they were doing, the doctors stank, and I was asked to leave the hospital, not to come back. And my daughter was born about 6 or 7 hours after I was asked to leave the hospital. Now, I suppose that there might be some disagreement as to whether my actions were those of a normal, sane human being. I have come to learn from people like you what made this happen to me and why I did this sort of thing. Speaking about these blue lights, occasionally came that urge, you know, to go out and do the town. And there was a spot in New York that I'd love very much called Radio Frank's. Frank Bessinger and Frank White. And I loved the guys. It was a wonderful spot. And I always had much fun. Well, before I got there one night, I was in another spot and I saw a honeymoon couple, evidently. He was a Marine sergeant, and he looked as though he was on his honeymoon with this little girl. And I went up and asked if this were so, and they said yes. So Big Shot Hank took over from that time on. Say no more. The town is yours tonight. And up to Bessinger's we go. I walk in and announce to the boys that here is this couple on their honeymoon and they must be showing a good time. And we sat at the bar before we went down into the dining area. I looked up at the end of the bar and there is a one-star general, and he doesn't have any of this braid on here that this Marine sergeant did. So I walked up to him and I said, "What are you, one of those desk chair generals? I've got a fighting man down here. I think you ought to buy him a drink." He did. We then went down a bit later and sat at the table and we were going to order dinner. And I looked at an adjoining table and there was another general, but this guy had 3 stars on him. He didn't have any ribbon either. By this time, I thought that if the other guy could buy a drink with 1 star, this fellow ought to be able to do better. I walked over to him with the same story and said, I think you ought to buy him a bottle of champagne. And to my amazement, he did. You see, there was no lack of humility in me. Speaking of humility, I heard a very cute definition of this recently. It amused me no end. Humility is like underwear. It's essential. But it's indecent if it shows. Well, let's skip a couple of years. And the father who had picked me up and dusted me off from the time that I started getting into trouble, who kept me out of trouble of the worst description that you could ever imagine, was desperately ill. He hadn't much money left, although he had retired as soon as Prohibition came into this country. You see, he was in the wholesale and retail liquor business. He had retired a wealthy man. But I had a call from Mother, rushed down. And I did. Again, well fortified. Another time of crisis. And I arrived at their modest little apartment about the same time as an ambulance. And I rode with him to a hospital in Lower New York, he in an oxygen mask, and he was rushed upstairs into a room under an oxygen tent. Again, I became the great expert. And again, I was booted out of there. And I went on down to my favorite Amen Corner in a pub that I loved, or thought I did. Bemoaning the fate of my father to my barroom pals until suddenly one of them said, don't you think you ought to call up and find out how he is? And I went to the phone and couldn't dial. I couldn't see too well. One of them called for me to tell me that he had died about 2 hours before. And I was so drunk that the boys literally had to carry me down to the old Pennsylvania Hotel Turkish Baths to get me cleaned up enough so that I could go tell Mother that Dad had died. And they did a good job cleaning me up. And I got up there about 7 in the morning to tell them. She pointed a finger at me and said, I never want to see you again. You killed your father. My reaction? I'll show you. And that was truly my reaction. And then the going really got rough. And that's when it really took hold of me. This thing that I have come to learn from people like you was alcoholism. And I'm not going to go on with much more of this, except to say that the next 4 or 5 years were rugged. Coming to in strange hotels, some flop houses, if you will, not knowing where or with whom, If there happened to be a bathroom somewhere near, going to look at the towels to see where I might be. And then came the decision that I made that life held no more for me. The thought, if you will, of suicide. And I started out on what I thought was going to be this. But I had no guts, if you want to know. I have not too many recollections of the next week or 10 days, but I can remember poised high in the Commodore Hotel, and every time the General Service Conference comes into session, I think of coming to with the window open, laying on the floor, no guts. I can remember coming to in some flop house with a can of open lye next to me and a peculiar looking drink. No guts. And eventually under one of the bridges a mess. No guts. And that's when I yelled, Uncle. How I got back to what was laughingly called a home, I'll never know. No one has been able to tell me. But when I was nursed back to health, I looked up a chap on the station platform in this little town that I lived in north of New York, who in the local grapevine was rumored to belong to something strange that helped you stop drinking. He had just moved into the area some 6 months before, and I went up to him and said, "But if I insult you, slug me." And I'll never forget the broad grin that came over that big fat pussy's. He said, "But I've been waiting for you." And this to me was truly one of the great wonders that have ever come to me. This smile that I shall never forget. And he said to me, as people have said to you and as you have said to others, "I'd like to talk to you a little bit. When can we get together?" He made it specific. He said, "Are you going to be home tonight?" A day never went so slowly. And he carried under his arm a book. Our book, Alcoholics Anonymous. And did he ask me anything about me? Nah. He told me about himself. And he said, "Here's a book, I want you to read it. And come to a meeting with me." And our nearest meeting at that time was some 20 miles away. And as we started up the long staircase in this building where this meeting was held, there was a chap standing on the top of the stairs with a big cigar in his mouth. And he said to my friend Brad, "I see you got a new one with you. It's good to see you." And this too I will never forget. This glad hand extended of fellowship. And I hope we never forget that there are those all over the world today who are extending hands to us. And we should never refuse to help those who ask our help. Now, the fact that Alcoholics Anonymous was the only thing that helped me does not make me feel that AA is the only answer for a person with a problem of alcoholism. The fact that it is the only thing that worked for me is unimportant in my opinion. So let's look at some of the other sources that I may have explored in the years before I came to this wonderful life. Let's take this conditioned reflex or aversion treatment, if you will. Now, I never happened to take any of this, but I tried a lot of treatments. You know, I'll never forget reading in Time magazine once a profile of Winston Churchill, a man whom I admired greatly, and it described in this article how at 11 in the morning he had a little dry sherry and perhaps a scotch before lunch and another scotch or two before dinner and perhaps a heavy body poured after dinner. And I thought, now, why didn't I ever think of this? This is wonderful. So this morning I went over to this little amen corner, and as I walked in, it was about 11 o'clock. I'd been watching the clock very carefully up to that point. And as I walked in, Jimmy, the morning bartender, said, "Where have you been all morning?" I said, "Jimmy, a new deal. I'll have a little dry sherry." Undoubtedly, everybody here has seen those stinking little glasses they put dry sherry in. And he put that glass on the bar, and I said, "Take it away, a double bourbon." I wonder if anybody else has ever promised their family that from thenceforth on they would drink nothing but beer. Well, I meant this very often. But one Christmas, I didn't know what to get this lovely mother-in-law of mine until suddenly a brilliant thought came to me. I will buy her a dozen 20-ounce tumblers. Now, only I knew what would happen to 20-ounce tumblers that I gave to her, and it happened just as I thought it would. "Well, these are simply beautiful, but why don't you take them? I have no use for them." And so those Friday nights, you know, when you come home and you have no work to do on Saturday except maybe mow the lawn and a few disagreeable things like that that are going to interfere, and you get home Friday night and maybe you're half fried or a couple of days before you haven't been home, and the little woman says, "Let's have a wonderful quiet weekend." And you say, "Right, I will drink nothing but beer." When you take a 20-ounce tumbler, when the family is not in the kitchen with you, you put about 6 ounces of gin in there, and you fill it up with beer, and nobody will know the difference. Except get ready for the inevitable question, how can you get so drunk on a few beers? But from people like you, I was given a conditioned reflex treatment. All you asked me to do was not to take a drink for the next 24 hours. And you also told me that 24 hours is too long. Cut it down to 24 minutes. And you also said, if the going gets rough, put a nickel in the slot. It's now a dime. And call somebody before you take a drink. For me, this has been a tremendous wonder also. The simplicity and the sharing of the brotherhood of man. Call me any time, day or night. Well, let's take our friends of medicine and psychiatry. And they truly are our friends. But sometimes they just don't know, maybe. Maybe we don't tell them everything either. I can remember going to one of these fancy doctors called the gastroenterologists. Now, this is a guy that has to do with everything down in here that always got us in so much trouble. Those butterflies at war down there and things like that, you know, playing ping pong, if you will, down in there. And going up to the good doctor one day and saying, "Doctor, this is simply awful. Have I got appendicitis or what is it?" He gave me a good going over. He said, "What do you drink?" I said, "I drink all sorts of things occasionally." He said, "Well, now I'm going to tell you one thing and you will have no more trouble. You just confine yourself to Scotch whiskey from here on. But drink it well diluted and drink it in water, not soda, just water. You will have no trouble." He didn't perhaps realize that the kidneys can take just so much water. And then you have to drink neat scotch, and where are you? And then the scotch runs out, and then you grab whatever else you can. I wouldn't be critical of him, though. He still remains one of my best friends. And in fact, he sends us a lot of business, too. Our friends of psychiatry. I wouldn't tell anybody what I was thinking, let alone a psychiatrist. But let me tell you a little story about an actual incident. Some years back, somebody suggested that I be called about a very prominent psychiatrist in the East who headed up a large mental institution with some 8,000 patients. And this good psychiatrist, this good doctor, was having trouble with booze. He was a periodic. And he'd smacked up an automobile, a state car, a few days before. Would I go see him? The following day, an official automobile of the state of New York called at my home with a chauffeur, and I was driven to this institution. And I went into the doctor's bedroom to find what you and I have found so many times and what others have found in our bedrooms. A man suffering. Now, here is a man who was a great man of science, if you will, condemning himself, and imagine his problems sitting in judgment on the mental lives of some 8,000 patients, realizing that he himself could not control this urge when it came upon him. And so we chatted. And some weeks later, we had seen each other very often. A couple of people, a few of us would sit around in his living room talking as time went on. And one evening he was holding forth. And in chatting along, he said, "And you know, we drunks." And he stopped as soon as he said, "We drunks." He said, "Do you realize what I just said? Thank God I've realized that alone, perhaps I could never have done anything. But in company with others like me, how much I can learn." And he also told me this. As a boy, he had been reared, and worshipped in the Church of the Latter-day Saints, the Mormon Church. Completely strayed away from any faith in anything except science. and to have him realize without anyone saying anything to him that he needed, in addition to all this knowledge, faith in God. God, as we understand him. And yet, haven't I found here in this fellowship that by talking to Mike and Mary and Harry and Jane, anybody to whom I might feel attracted, that I can get this stuff outside from within? We would have inner peace, but would not look within. To me, truly another wonder in this fellowship. The strength that comes from the willingness to listen, if to do nothing else, and to offer that outstretched hand, that bond of fellowship, which after all, between us, as alcoholics, is either life or death. And let's take thirdly our good friends of the clergy. I can remember years ago going into a church near home at all hours of the morning. It was open all night. It was known as the Church of the Open Door. I happened to be at the time a member of the Board of Vestry. And going into this church at 3-4 in the morning, drunk as a hooled owl, sitting down there and crying like a baby. These gimme prayers, if you will. Get me out of this one and it'll never happen again, and you know what I mean. My good friend, the rector at the time, whom incidentally I just had lunch with again a few weeks ago. We have stayed very close ever since. Having him tell me years ago, I knew of your problem and you're darn right he did. Because I even had the nerve to put the B on him sometimes for a few $100 to get me out of a jam. Having him tell me, what could I do to help? The difference between a dry martini and a gin ricky was sometimes something I knew nothing of. But whatever it is you have found, whatever it is you are doing, and in this wonderful association that you have found something. As I see it, there is no religion in Alcoholics Anonymous. And how I worship my God today is my business, and not yours. And God, as I understand him, is also my business, and not yours. I don't mean this perhaps quite in the way that I say it. But it happens to be my opinion that this is an intensely personal matter. Suffice it to say that my faith today has given me so much strength and so much courage. This little daughter of mine, whom I never knew as a child until perhaps 7 or 8 years ago, she would always run from me. About 3 years ago, she had a very deep personal problem and came to me for the first time. Truly a wonder, and I am so grateful to people like you for being able to truly become a father. This mother who told me years ago, I never want to see you again, who for many years had to babysit to keep herself going because I had used up everything that Dad had retired with. This mother today, whom I know again as a mother and have for some time, and who I am able to keep, not in luxury, but in comfort, surrounded by her friends, and with a relationship that did not exist for so long. This I am so grateful for. Yes, and also for the loss of a wife, and the courage that I learned from you to see her through her last illness. Truly a wonder, and the glory of God. But let us never forget those outstretched hands throughout the world. And if I seem a bit critical at this point, please overlook it. But I have seen so many requests for help, so many things that we all could be doing, which perhaps we do not do because of ignorance. I'm not going to tell you tonight about your international 12-step work, because this you will hear from Eve tomorrow. But I am going to say that I think we should think more of those who seek our help beyond the limits of our local village, of our local group, of our local city, yes, even of our local state. I don't happen to think that Alcoholics Anonymous has been such a big success. If after 25 years, we have only an estimated membership of some 250,000 people in this world, we've only scratched the surface. It has been said that it is much better to look to a glorious future than to look to a glorious past. Because if we do nothing but look at a glorious past, we sit there in quiet contentment. But if we are to look ahead to a glorious future, this means nothing but good, hard work. We talk of service. There isn't a bit of difference in service in this fellowship between the time that I first walked into a group and a few months after that, someone said, "Will you take the collection tonight? Will you pass the basket?" And a little bit after that, maybe we ought to start a new group up closer to home. And I was asked to become secretary of a group. And I can't speak for others, I can only speak for myself. The fact that some of us may have been asked to serve in local intergroup associations for a time, or that we may have been asked to serve as group representatives to an area body of the General Service Conference, that some of us may have been asked to serve as delegates, and may I take this opportunity of thanking the state of Ohio for sending us the delegates that you have sent us. The dedication and the work is so often overlooked. So many of us think of these particular things as positions of glory. They're not that. They are dedicated service. Or whether you may be asked to serve, as I have been able to serve sometimes at your general service office, there is no difference. There is no status. There is no caste. Because we are all one. We are there never to forget to extend that hand of help. The first time that I was ever asked to speak at a group, my local group near home, I'd been waiting for the opportunity, incidentally. And I got up, and I couldn't wait to tell them about some of the AA program. And now we get to this God business. Nuts! Nuts, that's what I said. The agnostic, the atheist, call me what you will at the time. But I have come to learn more of God as I understand him from the service available to those in this fellowship. And those things that over the years perhaps have seemed so absolutely impossible to you and to me as men and women are possible. They are possible with faith. And faith as you understand it. And as time goes on, how the horizons widen. How they widen. And how close a bond we feel with our brother man. I heard a close once, some years back at Bill's banquet in New York. And I'm going to close with this, borrowed from him. But before I do, may I hope to see all of us together in Long Beach, California, on July 1, 2, and 3 of 1960. I've been to California a couple of times in the last year. And I think this will be a sight that will never be repeated in my lifetime, I know. Because as a minimum, there will probably be 15,000 people meeting together to share and learn from each other. And this is why I happen to think of our old friend Austin McCormick, who served you also as a non-alcoholic member of your board of trustees some years ago before he went to California. And at Bill's banquet one night, he closed with this: let God have the power and the glory. And may you continue the search for his kingdom.
is only one thing left to say. Thanks. There is one word of warning that I think I should give Hank. And if I know Archie, I believe that Hank will pay for the crack he made about it. Lad, do you have any announcements you would like to be made? Everything is all right. Well, if there is nothing further, shall we rise and say the Lord's Prayer? And Hank, will you lead us?
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory.
We hope you enjoyed this recording. Please check out our website at sobrietytalks.com. You can also contact us by sending an email to sobrietytalks@aol.com. Thank you.